Welcome to the Deep End. I am Hamed. Joining me is my good friend and sports prodigy Mo.
What's going on, guys? We're back again. Another week, another hectic week, I should say. And boy, we got a lot to get through this episode. There's been Premier League, there's been AFCON, we got loads of rumors and transfers that have already went through for you guys. So you better hang tight. This is gonna be a pretty hefty episode. So why don't you get us started, Hamed?
Yeah, sure. We did mention, there's a lot of football going on in the world right now. Like Mo mentioned, Premier League, AFCON, obviously other international leagues. I just wanted to start off with AFCON because, you know, as we all know, there's a lot of African players in the Premier League that aren't really showing up these days, if you haven't noticed, and that's because of the AFCON tournament. The AFCON tournament, which is basically called the African Cup of Nations, it's being hosted in Cameroon this time, and it's a pretty important tournament to the continent of Africa because there's a lot of teams in Africa. There's a lot of, you know, entries and things like that. It was originally going to be played last summer, I believe. I think like at the same time the Euros were going on, but obviously because of COVID and because of the World Cup moving, you know, they just couldn't work it out. So AFCON has been moved to January. And for those of you who don't really know, there was like a little saga before this tournament was starting off because a lot of teams weren't really, they were pretty hesitant to send their African players to Cameroon out of fear for COVID, out of fear of injury, because you don't really want a good player of yours to get injured on international duty. And you don't want your player to leave the team because, you know, you could be in like a struggling position or you could be, you know, fighting for results, you know, and teams have been suffering because of that, namely Liverpool, because, you know, obviously Liverpool, they have Mo Salah and Sadio Mane, who are with Egypt and Senegal, respectively. So they're just, you know, they're pretty hurt right now, along with a bunch of other teams. And I just wanted to say, like, honestly, I just wish this tournament really never really happened in the first place. You know, we're missing these players. We're missing a lot of quality content in the Premier League. And for what? Like, the tournament has been beyond subpar. It has been just, the product being shown to us is just really bad. We've had, like, I believe the group stage is over at the moment, and we do know who's going on to the knockout stages. But man, the first like what week of this tournament, we haven't really seen a team win by a result other than 1-0.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, it was like it a bunch of like 1-0, 1-0, 1-0 for like the first week.
Exactly. It was either like 0-0 or 1-0 the entire first week. And then, you know, we had a couple of good games. I think I've only watched one good game in the group stage so far. And I've watched a couple of games, by the way. But no, like this tournament, I thought, you know, it was going to be like a breath of fresh air from what we're, you know, used to seeing in the Premier League and what we're used to seeing in other leagues. But no, man, all this tournament has made me do, it just made me wish it never happened in the first place so we can continue seeing, you know, the Premier League in its top form. And we've seen that. We've seen, like, teams before this tournament started off, you know, we had a couple of contenders already in mind. You know, we had Algeria, who are currently the reigning champions. We had Senegal, who on paper have the best squad in the entire tournament. We've had Egypt, you know, they're always contenders in this tournament. We've had, you know, a bunch of teams that we thought were going to cruise in the group stages, and they've all struggled. Algeria's out. I don't know if anyone has been paying attention, but Algeria's out. They've had one win.
No wins.
Yeah, 1 point. I'm sorry. Yeah, it was 1 point. In three group stage matches, they've scored one goal the entire tournament. They're just lost out there. They had a 35 win streak snapped this tournament. And I'm not sure what happened to that team because their competition in the group stages weren't really that, you know, threatening. They weren't great at all. They led a team called Equatorial Guinea literally walk all over them. That was the only good game that I watched during the group stages, because Equatorial Guinea, they put on a show that game. It was a very intense game, back and forth between both teams, and it was just crazy to see. And it's even crazier to think that, you know, Algeria's suffering from such a poor run of form, and we're in January. We have a World Cup in 10 months, and Algeria was, you know, starting to make some noise, and they were like being looked at as, you know, a very fun team to follow during the World Cup. But if they play anything similar to how they played in the AFCON, like, no, Algeria is going to see an early exit.
Yeah, I think before I get into like anything else about the tournament, the whole Algeria thing, yeah, I mean, 4 goals conceded from a group where, I mean, you got Sierra Leone, Equatorial Guinea, and Ivory Coast, which is just the only good team in the group, I would say. The only powerhouse in the group. I think Algeria's issue is they underestimated everyone in this tournament, and everyone in their group, I'm sorry. They came in off a nice like championship high, and I feel like a lot of their players that have been playing overseas or in England or in Europe or whatever it may be, they've been doing really well. So I think they might have came in a little bit cocky, but their defense was just shocking. I mean, like, their defense was horrible that game. Every team was getting everything they could get against them. And yeah, there was a bit of bad luck. Mahrez, he had a couple chances like in multiple games where he puts those shots away in a Man City uniform like 9 times out of 10. But for some reason, he just couldn't put it away with Algeria. And they were coming off an Arab Cup tournament where, you know, they did really well, and they had a lot of, like you said, they were coming in on fire, and I think a lot of their players were kind of overhyped from that tournament. I think I'm gonna go with the word overhyped, just because facing competition in that tournament, I mean, yeah, you're facing African teams, but some African teams are actually like low-key sneaky good. Like Sierra Leone, you said, played Equatorial Guinea, played a good game against them. Sierra Leone held them to a draw as well. So like I was saying, I mean, I think their issue was they just underestimated their competition, and they bit them in the rear end, you know. And the other teams that have been struggling, Tunisia, I remember on the last episode I said my favorites were Senegal, Algeria, and Morocco in that order. Morocco has been okay. They haven't been great. The only team that I've really seen like that have been flying is Nigeria. They won every single game.
They were too, by the way. They've been doing really solid.
Yeah. Ivory Coast has been good too. Cameroon, the hosts, have been amazing too. That opening game was really good. They played a really good game against Burkina Faso in the opening game. So I still think, and you got teams like Ghana that have been eliminated. So I still like Morocco in this tournament out of the two teams, and Senegal. Obviously Algeria is out, so there goes one of my picks. But I'm still sticking to those two, Senegal and Morocco. And I might want to throw in Nigeria or Ivory Coast in there, one of those two teams. I think it's going to come down to the three of those, either Senegal, Ivory Coast / Nigeria, and Morocco. I think those three teams might be one of the ones to take it away, unless we see a big upset like a Guinea or a Burkina Faso or Equatorial
Guinea. Mali's been doing, they've had some pretty solid results as well. Like, they're my dark horse of the tournament so far. But yeah, as for like the picks of like the final three, the final four, I'm pretty sure like I agree with all your picks coming into this tournament. I mean, it's a shame that Egypt is definitely not mentioned as a contender, because like, just, it's crazy to see, like, you know, having one of the best players in the world, it's clearly not enough. And you know, they're awful. They're just awful. They are struggling. Their defense is just awful. Offensively, literally no one but Mo Salah does anything offensively for that team. And it's crazy to see, because you mentioned a couple minutes ago how Riyad Mahrez literally puts those shots away when he's in Man City uniform. I feel like it's kind of the same thing with Salah too, because like with Salah, we're used to seeing like insane goals. Like, this dude literally dribbled around 3 Man City defenders. This guy dribbled around like, you know, 2 couple of Watford players. He goes up against the best competition in the world week in and week out. But when he goes in for international duty, he turns into someone else entirely. Like, he misses passes that he would usually make, like, easily in the Premier League. He misses shots that he usually puts away in the Premier League. His dribbling becomes basically non-existent. And I know that the supporting cast around him is not helping him at all. I get it. But at the same time, like, dude, put the team on your back. Like, we all know that you're better than this. You know, like, I think, what was it? We lost, or Egypt, yeah, they're three games. They lost to Nigeria 1-0, I believe it was in the first game. They won their second game and their third game 1-0. So there's that. So just, you know, not a great showing in the group stages so far. And I don't really have hope for them, you know, advancing in the knockout stages. Who are they playing? I believe they're playing the Ivory Coast?
Ivory Coast.
There's no way they're getting past those.
No.
With the form that the Ivory Coast was in during the group stages, yeah, there's literally no way we're getting past them. That's just damn near impossible. So if we're going to talk about my realistic pick to win the tournament, if they can stay injury-free and they can, you know, pick up their form, I still think Senegal is definitely my pick. Because like I said, dude, like on paper, they have definitely one of the most dangerous squads. I'm not even going to talk about the continent of Africa. Like, Senegal could definitely take on, like, a couple of good European teams and give them a run for their money. We're talking about a team that has Edouard Mendy, who was literally just named the best goalkeeper by, you know, the FIFA players. He was voted in, during the best awards as the best goalkeeper. We're talking about Kalidou Koulibaly, who's, you know, a couple years ago, literally the most wanted defender in the world. You know, he's definitely one of the best defenders in the world a couple years back. He's kind of past his prime these days, but he's still pretty good. We're talking about Sadio Mane. We're talking about Nampal Ismende. We're talking about Buna Sarr, who plays for Bayern Munich. We're talking about Ismail Assar, who currently plays for Watford. We're talking about Idrissa Gana Gueye, who the midfielder for PSG, who is just really, really good. So you have a lot of great players for that team. It didn't really, their talent wasn't really showcased during the group stages, the group stage matches. But I feel like they can definitely pick it up and do well from here on out.
Yeah, I think, like you said, if they say injury-free, yeah, they were a little disappointing in the group stage. I think that's what great teams do, and I think they're a great team, and that being that they'll pick up the pace when it's crunch time, and, you know, once it gets to when it matters, I think they'll perform, and I think they'll be in the final. And depending on who they face, yeah, but I think they should make the final, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, so we're just going to segue into the Premier League because there's a lot of games being played. Unfortunately, most of those games have been postponements because we've had a lot of, you know, postponements this year, whether it be due to COVID cases, whether it be due to a combination of COVID cases and injuries. There's just been a lot of games canceled and, you know, being played again this season. First game I want to get into is Leicester and Tottenham. This was, like, I'm going to start it off with a banger because this game was absolutely insane. Definitely, like, a moment to go down in, like, the history of the Premier League. We start off the game, Leicester, you know, I believe that they scored early. Yes, they did score 24 minutes in. Pat Ndaka, he hit a pretty good angle shot against, you know, Lloris, the goalkeeper for Tottenham. Harry Kane, kind of getting back to form, scored about, I think, 15 minutes later. It was like the 38th or 39th minute. Firing into that far corner, it was a really, really good shot for him. I do remember watching that highlight.
It was clinical.
Yeah. It just, you know, kind of gives you flashes of the old Harry Kane, you know, the one that being discussed as like one of the best keepers in the world, or one of the best strikers in the world. Definitely an elite talent in the Premier League when he plays well. It was pretty boring after that. I think it was like near the end of the second half when Leicester went in front off of a James Maddison goal assisted by Harvey Barnes. And for those of you, you know, who are fans of Leicester, you kind of know that these two are basically, like, a very good, like, dynamic duo, like a 1-2 punch in Leicester squad. Watching them last season, it kind of felt like every single goal that wasn't from Jamie Vardy was either from James Maddison or Harvey Barnes. Harvey Barnes, especially, because he was on his tear this time last year in the Premier League. And it was unfortunate that he suffered an injury. I believe it was an ACL injury. I think it was in, like, March, April, something like that. That's what kind of, you know, made him, you know, obviously he didn't play until, like, recently. So it's really good to see Harvey Barnes get back in form. The best part of the game came up next, though, when it was stoppage time. Like, the ref had given 6 minutes of stoppage time. And near the end of the game, Steven Bergwijn had come off the bench to come into the game. Steven Bergwijn ended up scoring in the 95th minute. It was a pretty simple goal, you know, nothing big. Kind of equalized. And you kind of think that, you know, with 6 minutes of stoppage time and someone scoring in the 95th minute, like, that's basically it. Like, we're done here. It's going to be a 2-2 draw, good for, you know, Tottenham and things like that. But apparently Steven Bergwijn, he wasn't done yet, because the dude went ahead and scored again in the 97th minute of stoppage time, or technically the 7th minute of stoppage time, assisted by Harry Kane this time. Two goals in 2 minutes, dude, he was just going off. And it's just crazy to see, because Steven Bergwijn was a player, literally a couple days ago, he was mentioned that he wasn't happy at Tottenham, and Antonio Conte did not see him as part of the long-term plan. And both Bergwijn's camp and Antonio Conte were kind of pushing for him to leave Tottenham this transfer window, possibly going back to Ajax, where that's where, you know, his former team before he actually came to Tottenham. And for him to come on and score literally two goals in 2 minutes kind of puts them in an awkward situation, because, like, what do you do now? Like, do you still push for a transfer? You kind of give him a second chance. Like, you don't really know what to do from here on out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. That's a good point to make, actually, about, like, the position that they're in now. After a player does that for your team, you know, when beforehand you wanted to get rid of him, so they're gonna have to make a tough decision either way. But it's just crazy. That whole game was insane. And Tottenham, they were trailing for the longest amount of time, and then went on to win in history. Like, they were trailing for 94 minutes and 52 seconds, and then they won. And the team that did that before them was Man City. They were trailing for 91 minutes when they won the league against QPR, when Aguero scored that famous goal to win them the league. But just it's just crazy. Like, you look at all these stats and all these, like all the numbers said that Tottenham should have lost. There's no way they would have won this game after trailing for that long. But, I mean, listen, man, good for them. They needed this win. They needed to climb up the table just because, obviously, like, you know, Man City, which we'll get to in a second, they've distanced themselves greatly from the other teams. They can probably get top four. I mean, who knows? West Ham fell against Leeds United, so they didn't win. So Tottenham is only 1 point behind them now. So if they can win the next game, they'll be in fourth place. They're still going to be a little bit behind Chelsea. Depending on how Chelsea do, they'll still be a little bit behind them. But Chelsea also dropped points. So it's good that it's really good that Tottenham got the win, because they needed it with all these other teams that were dropping points. So that's good for them. But yeah, crazy game. Let me transition into the Man United, their second game. They had two games this match week. Their second game was against Brentford. It was just played a couple days ago on Wednesday. And that game was crazy in and of itself, because for people that watched this game, you saw that Brentford were attacking, like, ruthlessly the first half. And David De Gea, I mean, round of applause for this guy. They say every good goalkeeper needs to know how to use his feet too, like kick saves, and he's one of the best at it, along with Courtois and Ter Stegen, and those guys also very good at it. But he made a lot of kick saves, tough kick saves at just high reflexes. Like, not much more you can say about that. But he's just been electric. And I mean, they got the scoring started off. The two youngsters, Anthony Elanga and Mason Greenwood, scored, and then Rashford finished it off. Not before Ivan Toney can get a goal. Ivan Toney got a goal, sorry, after the three. It was 3-0. It was in the 85th minute, so a little bit insignificant. The game was probably already over. But the talking point in this game was more that Ronaldo got subbed off, I think the 65th minute, something like that. And as the goal was going in, you see the manager was kind of talking to him as if to tell Cristiano Ronaldo, like, yeah, that's why. Like, that's why I subbed you off, because I wanted to give the young players, I want to give them their space to kind of, like, move up and play and be more creative and do all that stuff. So a lot of people were shocked. I mean, Ronaldo obviously wasn't happy walking off. He doesn't really hide his emotions well. He kind of wears his heart on his sleeve, and he lets it be known when he's upset. So, and he was definitely upset. Yeah, and he was definitely upset. That's a big fact, though. He was definitely upset. So for that game, I really think that Brentford battled. They did all they could in the first half, but I think David De Gea just made so many good saves that they just ran out of gas. They did all they could, but Man United at the end of the day is Man United, and that was their 600th away win, which is pretty significant for a club like that. I mean, I know Man United's a club with a lot of history, 300 away wins. They're a club with a lot of history and everything like that. And the next closest club to them is Chelsea with 259 away wins, but I think it has a lot to do with, like, with how their back line is set up. I really like their defense, like Varane. Obviously, Luke Shaw, he hasn't been playing, but Alex Telles is also a good option. Lindelof for Harry Maguire, you know, neither one of them. Diego Dalot, he's been a good addition to them. And then, of course, having David De Gea doesn't hurt at all. So, good win for United. They're also in that top four, the battle for top four. They're not too far either. They're currently in sixth or seventh, I think. They're in seventh. They're behind Arsenal, and they have a game in hand on Arsenal. So if they win their game in hand, next game in hand, then they'll be above them. And Arsenal, their game got postponed, so they couldn't get to play it. But they haven't looked that great recently. They're kind of shaky a little bit. Haven't looked that convincing. But who knows? The race, like fourth, is pretty close. So it should be really interesting what happens in that race in the next coming weeks. Should be pretty interesting to see.
Yeah, no, you mentioned Tottenham being 1 point off of West Ham because they dropped points to Leeds. Arsenal's, I mean, the game that was postponed this game week was against Tottenham. Like, Tottenham was supposed to have a double game week this week. So it's going to be really interesting to see that Arsenal-Tottenham game. Other than the fact that it's a derby, just seeing, you know, where they're placed in the Premier League table right now is going to be really interesting to see, obviously. You know, this wasn't Man United's only game in this during this game week. They also had a previous game against Aston Villa. They've been doing all right ever since, you know, Steven Gerrard took over. He's been doing really good for the squad, both on the pitch and off the pitch when it comes to transfers. And the reason I mentioned that is because, without going into too much depth here, the main points that I do want to get out of this game is that the only reason that Aston Villa did not drop all 3 points was because of a recent transfer. For those of you who don't know, Felipe Coutinho, the former Liverpool midfielder who basically forced his way to Barcelona, came on for Villa. It was his debut game. Came on near the end of the second half. And in 22 minutes of game time, gave in a goal and an assist. Literally because of this man, that this is the only reason that Aston Villa tied with Man United. It was a pretty crazy game in itself. Really, really good to see Felipe Coutinho making a difference on the pitch once more, because ever since he's been transferred to Barcelona, he's been kind of jumping around clubs. I think it's safe to say that his transfer to Barcelona definitely did not work out in his favor. Kind of more on the karma side, even, because I remember during I think the season in which he left Liverpool was most lost first season. I think that is, 2017, I believe. And Philippe Coutinho actually said, he was quoted, that he wanted to go to a team that could win trophies. And since he's left, Liverpool have won a Champions League trophy. They have won the Premier League once. And ever since Coutinho has been to Barcelona, you know, they haven't really won much. He technically won a Champions League when he was on loan with Bayern Munich. And, it's definitely a tough time for Felipe Coutinho since he's left Liverpool. But it was really, really nice to see him, you know, contribute for Aston Villa. He was even quoted after the game, you know, saying that he missed being the Premier League. He really loves being the Premier League. So hopefully, this isn't the last time we see him, you know, make a contribution on the field. And who knows, maybe this loan deal, since this is technically a loan deal for 6 months, maybe this loan deal can turn into something more permanent and we could see him at, you know, Aston Villa going forward.
Yeah, it would be nice. I mean, as a Barca fan, I really, really, it's really good to see him doing well. I liked him a lot as a player. I thought he was always a classy player, and he brought a lot to the table as well. So it's definitely good to see him doing well, and I hope he does stay there and makes a good impact. You know, him and Steven Gerrard were teammates back in the day in Liverpool, so for a little bit. So they are quite familiar with each other. And I think Gerrard will know how to use him well in the system. Coutinho is one of those guys that you can kind of plug him in into anywhere in the midfield, and he'll make it work. He's got that flair. He could shoot from outside the box. He can make passes. So I think it's definitely a good addition for Aston Villa. And Aston Villa already has a great team. They were just missing a couple more pieces. So maybe they can get another big name player, and who knows, maybe really make some noise in the Premier League for sure. And speaking of noise, real quick, just want to cap off by mentioning the Man City and Chelsea game. Seems like ages ago. This was still technically the same game week that we've been talking about, match week 22. So this game was nice. It was a really good game, back and forth game. City and Chelsea didn't look too good. Chelsea didn't look really that good at all, honestly, in my opinion. I thought, especially Lukaku, I thought he's been pretty poor since he's come back. At the beginning of the season, when the season first started, like, he was on a tear. And then he got hurt for a little bit, and he came back. And then he's been inconsistent ever since he came back. I just, obviously, Chelsea are playing with Edouard Mendy, who we mentioned before, is duties at AFCON. So, Ederson in goal for Man City, which is normal. Kyle Walker, John Stones, Laporte, and Cancelo. No Ruben Diaz at the moment for Man City. I think it's just one of those things where Pep is just, you know, giving players rest, or he's just plugging in different players because he can, because he just has an embarrassment of riches at his disposal right now. And technically, Phil Foden was at striker, which is fine, I guess. I think for Man City at this point, really doesn't even matter who they play at striker anymore. So other than that, the lineup was pretty solid. Bernardo Silva, Raheem Sterling, Kevin De Bruyne, and Jack Grealish. Kevin De Bruyne, who scored a world-class goal. That goal was just classic Kevin De Bruyne, outside the box. Nice shot, curler, all the finesse in the world. Nothing Kepa can do about it. But yeah, that guy is special, man. His passing, his vision, everything he does, like, it's just insane. And like I said, it doesn't matter who's really playing at striker for them. Because when you have a midfield like that, you have players that are so creative in the midfield like that. Kevin De Bruyne and Rodri is also, I think he's underrated. Bernardo Silva, who's amazing this year. And your defense is stacked as well. Like, you got players like Draxler that can get forward and score goals and make plays too. So it's like, you can't really go wrong. You really can't go wrong with anything you do. And then you have Ilkay Gundogan off the bench and Gabriel Jesus. So it's like, yeah, there's really, you can really do no wrong. And they haven't done any wrong really this year. That's why they're leading the Premier League by so much. Chelsea actually didn't even register a single shot in the first half. And that's the first time they failed to do that in a single half of a Premier League game since May 2018 against Newcastle. And Man City have won each of their 12 Premier League games. It's the ninth run of 12 plus successive victories in the competition's history. So So Man City have done this 9 times now, where they've won 12 plus games in a row in the Premier League. So this team is just world class, and I don't think it's far fetched to say that the Premier League is probably going to be theirs, even though we're still in January. But I'm just going to go out on a limb and say it already.
I mean, yeah, that's far from a hot take there.
Yeah. What,
11-ish points, I believe it's more than 10 at least. Off of, you know, the difference between them and second place. And with their current run of form, it doesn't really look like they're slowing down at all. And not to mention, they've been very, very lucky when it comes to COVID cases. It kind of feels like, you know, they don't really have anyone that's out really, really, really out due to COVID. So that's something. And like you mentioned, you know, it kind of feels like when Aguero retired, Manchester City also retired the entire striker position, because it feels like you said, they don't need a striker. You basically said everything that I didn't want to say. Bernardo Silva, you know, being this standout, he's been definitely one of the best players in the Premier League this season. He's definitely the best Portuguese player. No disrespect to Cristiano Ronaldo, but he's definitely been the best Portuguese player in the Premier League so far this season. And you mentioned a lot of, you know, very solid options in the midfield. But also, you know, they have a lot of great defenders that can also run the ball up, you know, build up attacking plays and things like that. I'm talking about Joao Cancelo, obviously, being their best defender this season. We're talking about, you know, Ruben Dias. We're talking about Laporte. We're talking about Kyle Walker. You know, they're just stacked at basically every position to the point where you genuinely do not need a striker. And Gabriel Jesus, he's okay. He comes off the bench and he does his job. He's serviceable at best. But is he like a player that, you know, that should be in the same conversation as these other players that we're talking about, such as, you know, Kevin De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva, etc.? No, mm-hmm. Definitely not. He's definitely not there. But yeah, no, it's it does look like it's another season for City, and it's just crazy to see. Obviously, they're backed by a very wealthy owner, and they have basically all the money in the world at their disposal. But, you know, money doesn't win you everything. It really doesn't. Like, I mean, look at Paris Saint-Germain. Yes, they have a very large lead in League One right now, but when they come up against, you know, actual competition in the Champions League, they struggle. And a lot of players at PSG right now, they're also struggling. You know, Messi's only scored a couple of games this season so far. And it's definitely, we're not, like, used to seeing him struggle so much. So it just goes to show you, money does not get you everything in the world of football.
Oh, you're you know, right. I agree.
You need solid coaching, and Pep Guardiola is... Mm-hmm. I'm struggling to think of a better coach than him at the moment.
No, it's really hard to name one, honestly. And I'm not just saying that because I love Pep and everything he's done for Barca, but no, objectively speaking, I think he is the best coach right now in the entire world. I mean, it's really hard to debate. I mean, we'll see what Ralph Rangnick does at Man United. People have been singing his praises before he even started there, so we'll see. We'll see what he does. But yeah, definitely Pep has them all beat right now, for sure. He's
absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm just going to get, you know, we're going to segue a little bit into transfers. Definitely my favorite part of pretty much any sport. Like, anyone who knows me personally knows that, like, I'm a very big fan of, like, transactions and transfers and things like that, whether it comes to, you know, the NBA, the NFL, and obviously when it comes to football as well. Transfers. It is transfer season all over the world right now, because there's only basically two transfer windows during the entire year. One of them is during the summer, and it is between August 1st and August 31st, and the second being from December 31st until January 31st. And it's been a pretty wild window so far. I believe the first confirmed transfer was, speaking of City, the first confirmed transfer was Ferran Torres, who was transferred over to Barcelona for, I think it was a fee of 55 million. A very, very solid transfer for Barcelona, considering their, you know, their financial woes, considering, you know, the players, the quality of players, you know, at Barcelona at the moment. 55 million was a pretty, it's a pretty good transfer fee. Ferran Torres is definitely worth more than that to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to get him at that price is just a very, very good pickup for Barcelona. It kind of took them a while to be able to register him as a player in the squad. And, you know, they had to, you know, work some things around. You know, a couple players took another couple pay cuts. You know, just something that, you know, Barcelona has to do these days. Since they're currently, like, what, 1.3 billion euros in debt, something like that. But no, very good pickup for Barcelona. You would know more about it than I do. I do know that he scored his debut goal a couple days ago. Wasn't it yesterday even?
Yeah, and it was a hell of a goal too. It was not just any normal goal. It was a really nice team build-up goal. Yeah, so like you said, he's going to be a great addition to our team. And hopefully, man, we can keep him for years to come. Hopefully he's not one of those guys where we just spend a bunch of money on and, you know... I think those days are done with, though, where we spend money on guys and just don't play them or just, like, let go of them after, like, a couple years. I think those days are gone, though. I think I can safely say that.
All right. Yeah, next up on the transfer list, I'm just going to go for, like, a little duo at the moment. It is Luca Digne and Felipe Coutinho. Obviously, I mentioned Felipe Coutinho transferring in from Barcelona to Aston Villa. We mentioned all this before, 22 minutes of game time, one goal, one assist. But we're also talking about Luca Digne. Luca Digne is a left back from Everton. And Everton's kind of in a tough spot right now. They're currently 6 points off of relegation. They just fired their coach, Rafa Benitez. Obviously, just, you know, his experiment at Everton is not working out at all. And Luca Digne, you know, last season he was one of the best left backs in the entire league. But this season, he's seen a pretty big regression. He's just not doing well for Everton. I don't know if it's a coaching thing. I don't know what it is. But, you know, the relationship between Luca Digne and Everton pretty much soured over the last couple of months. And, you know, Steven Gerrard literally just swooped in, picked this guy up. And it's a very, very solid addition to the squad. You know, pairing him up with Tyrone Mings. You know, being basically the main defender for Martinez, the goalkeeper. Just a really, really solid pickup for Aston Villa. I really like what Aston Villa has been doing so far. It kind of shows you that, you know, Steven Gerrard's project is a long-term project, but at the same time, he's committed to making Aston Villa a competitive squad, like, right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Last summer, we saw them pick up Danny Ings. After he requested a leave, a transfer from Southampton. And, you know, that was a really, really good signing for them as well. So Aston Villa, the past 12 months, they've had a really, really solid transfer window so far. Like I said, and especially Felipe Coutinho, because it kind of feels like defensively Aston Villa has been okay so far. They could be better, but, like, that's not their weak. Their weakest, the weak link of that team. I feel like the midfield was basically the weak link of that team because, like, if we're going to talk about the midfield of Aston Villa, the only couple players that come to mind in my eyes are, like, you know, John McGinn and Douglas Luiz. And John McGinn, he's okay, he's all right, but, like, he's not the kind of player that can really take that, you know, take the team on his back and do well for them in the midfield. He doesn't really do a lot of build-up plays. He's kind of more like a hustle player. And Douglas Luiz, he's okay. He definitely has potential, but he's like more of a holding midfielder. So you're not really seeing a lot of attack in that midfield for Aston Villa. And I feel like this is where Felipe Coutinho comes in. And this is where I feel like he's definitely what they need for them to become more competitive, for them to stay in the Premier League. You know, maybe fight for a Europa Conference spot, not even a Europa League spot, just, you know, that new tournament. I don't even know what's called, the UEFA Conference League, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I really like what Aston Villa have done. Luca Digne, I don't know. I'm not really high on him. I'm not that high on him, but I think definitely Coutinho, like I was saying before when we were going over the game, Coutinho is one of those players that you can just plug and play and that Gerrard will be pretty familiar with him and I think he'll know how to use him. But I kind of want to get into this possible transfer that will happen maybe in the coming days. That's my boy Ousmane Dembele finally getting out of his hospital bed to potentially switch teams. Our Barca, one of the directors of the club, or someone in high position at the club, I forgot his title, but he essentially sat down his agent and they told him, look, we're not going to sign you because you're asking for way, 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 way too much money. And essentially, you haven't shown us that you're worth that money. So we're going to go ahead and just let you know right now, you're not going to be in the squad for any of the games. So pretty much pack your bags, just get ready. It's just a matter of time, matter of a phone call. And a couple of teams have been linked with him, which is fine by me. Honestly, as a Barca fan, I'm okay with him leaving. I don't hate the guy. I just hate that he can't stay healthy. And I hate that when he is healthy, he doesn't really do much either. He's been very selfish lately. I think he's trying to prove himself. So he's been like extra selfish with the ball whenever he used to get it in games. And then, yeah, like I said, he's hardly ever plays anyway. So it's like, want to go, man. That's fine. I'm glad Barca didn't make that same mistake. If this was the Bartomeu regime, I guarantee you, they would have paid him the money he was asking for without even thinking about it. But I'm glad that Laporta has this situation on lock, and I think he's doing some low key stuff right now. He's doing stuff in the works to get a replacement for him. He also came out and talked like probably a couple weeks ago about like how he was gonna try his best to get Haaland, but a lot of people have debunked those rumors. So we'll see what happens. I just don't think he'll sit there. We're definitely gonna get someone, but again, this is still nothing official. But they did tell him to pretty much get ready to leave Barcelona. So there's that.
Yeah, kind of a confusing saga for Dembele. Obviously, him being injury prone, you know, not being worth the 120 million euros that they bought him for in what, 2015, 2017. I'm not even sure what year it was. From Dortmund, definitely has not lived up to his contract. And you know, you can't really blame Barcelona for not giving into his demands and what he wants for a contract. Like, we're talking about a club that has to literally watch every single penny that they're spending these days because of the strict financial regulations of La Liga, plus the debt that they're in. You know, you can't really blame them for, you know, doing this to Dembele. You know, it sucks to see, but like, you can't really blame the squad. Like, dude, you are not living up to your contract. How do you want us to give into your demands for a contract when you can't even live up to your previous one? And then, you know, obviously it just doesn't look like they're messing around. They told him basically, like, you either sign the contract that we offer to you, the ones that go under our terms, or you can be shown the door. You know, and Dembele pretty much kind of like called the bluff and said, you know, no, I'm not going to sign whatever you guys are offering. I'm going to stay, you know, and tough it out. And, you know, maybe my production will help you guys see that, like, I'm worth what I'm asking for. And Barcelona just clearly does not have the time for that, or they do not have the energy for that anymore. So they literally came out a couple days ago and said, you know, I'm sorry, that this is going to be the end of our working relationship. We're not going to see Dembele anymore in a Barcelona uniform. He's definitely played his last game as a Barcelona player. I do not expect to see him sold this transfer window, only because, like, there's 10 days left. As of this recording, there's 10 days left in the transfer window, and I don't know how you can work out a transfer for him in 10 days. Unless you can find an interested buyer, like, literally right now, it's kind of tough to see him going anywhere else. And I do know that the only interested buyer, the only team that is currently calling him, is Newcastle United. As we all know, Newcastle is currently the richest club in the world. They've made a couple of transfers that I'm going to get into right after this one. But yeah, the only interested team right now is Newcastle United. And I feel like he would be okay for that squad, but I feel like this is definitely rushed. Definitely more like a splash signing to show fans at Newcastle, they have money now. They can buy these players. You know, anyone who's not really interested in their contract at the moment can, you know, head over to Newcastle United. You know?
Pretty much, man. Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, like you said, go ahead and get into the other people they signed this
morning. Yeah, Newcastle. When it comes to Newcastle, You know, they started off the transfer window signing Kieran Trippier, the former Tottenham player who enjoyed a really, really good spell at Atletico Madrid, winning the La Liga title last year, being their starting right back. Really, really good. He flourished under Diego Simeone. But, you know, just, you know, things don't work out. He's getting up there in age. He's currently 31. You know, it's kind of time for him to move. And Newcastle can't call him because Newcastle's clearly struggling. Like, Newcastle is currently what they're in the relegation zone at the moment. Like, so they definitely need like reinforcements like ASAP in order to save them from relegation, because it would be embarrassing to be the richest club in the world and playing in the second tier of your respective country. Is just embarrassing. Like, you're not gonna attract players if you're playing in the second tier. You're not gonna have a solid plan going forward if all your first team players want to leave, because, you know, a lot of players tend to leave their club when they get relegated, especially the older players. So yeah, no, Kieran Trippier was the first Newcastle United signing. The second one was a kind of a transfer. It was more like a release clause kind of thing. Really, really rare to see these days, but they ended up signing Chris Wood. Chris Wood was a Burnley player. With a, I think it was 20 million. Yeah, he had a release contract or a release clause in his contract for 20 million. What basically a release clause does, it allows a team to bypass negotiations with the club of that player and instead literally just playing the release clause and going to the player, working out a contract for his wages and things like that. And that's it. That's what the release clause does. It basically just saves you a lot of time, a lot of negotiations with the team. And Newcastle ended up paying Burnley a good 30 million for his contract plus his release clause and things like that. And it worked out pretty well for Newcastle so far, even though he hasn't played a game yet. I feel like this is a really solid transfer for a couple reasons. First off, Newcastle desperately needs a striker. Saint-Maximin, he's been okay at striker so far. He's been really, really consistent, but at the same time, it is not his natural position. So they definitely needed a striker moving forward, and Chris Wood could be that guy that they need. And the second reason is, I mentioned before that Newcastle is currently in the relegation zone, but so are Burnley. Burnley are desperately looking for attacking players because so far they've thrived off of being a really, really good defensive team. You don't really find a lot of attacking players for Burnley. The only two players that could basically do anything on offense for Burnley this season were Chris Wood and Maxwell Cornet. And Chris Wood is gone now. Maxwell Cornet is literally the only guy that could basically do anything offensively for that team. And surprisingly enough, he's not even an attacking player. Like, he is naturally a right back. It's not what he does. But he does end up attacking for Burnley quite often. So for Newcastle to take one of the main offensive players from a team that is also in the relegation zone with them is really, really smart on their part. I really like the transfer. Regardless of what Chris Wood does for Newcastle United, you know, it kind of just goes to show you that Newcastle's kind of playing the long game and doing their best to get out of this relegation zone.
Yeah, and they really need to, because I think the biggest thing is, like what you said, them having that influx from the Saudi fund and possibly being relegated, that's a terrible look. And That's not gonna get you any players. If anything, players are gonna be leaving. And with Norwich, they won today, and they climbed out of the relegation zone actually. So now it's Watford, Newcastle, and Burnley. And Newcastle is 12 points, and Burnley's 11. So who knows? I mean, if those two teams switch pots and Newcastle goes down to 20th. It's going to be very tough for them. I don't think that money might just be sitting there. Honestly,
exactly.
Not really going to do much for them. Like you said earlier, money can't really get you everything. You gotta have a base. You gotta, you know, build yourself up and then start attracting all the talent. But who knows? Maybe they could possibly reel in Dembele. It's like you said, there's 10 days left. It's going to take a lot of, you know, negotiations and something to go. I know Barca wants to get rid of him like pretty quick too, but even if they do get him, I don't. Maybe they might get out of the relegation zone, but maybe not, because they think they still need a bit more help. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with them. And any other transfers or any other rumors you wanted to run through?
No. There's still quite a bit. I could keep going with Newcastle even, because you mentioned that Newcastle is currently at 12 points, Burnley is at 11 points. Regardless of what place they're in, the bottom three teams get relegated, so technically they would both get relegated.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is Burnley would get relegated because they have no offense. Newcastle will get relegated because they're just bad. They have all this money in the world, literally the richest club in the world right now, and they just couldn't get together. To be fair, and to be unbiased, Newcastle has improved a little bit since this new ownership group came in. They came in, they hired Eddie Howe, who is literally famous for taking struggling clubs and taking them to respectable heights. And he's been doing well so far, by the way. He's, you know, getting the most out of Saint-Maximin, who has been, like I said, very consistent so far. He has moved Joel Linton to the midfield spot. For those of you who don't know, Joel Linton was a striker, or he technically still is a striker for Newcastle United. But when he signed, literally Newcastle ultras were literally calling this guy the next Aguero, because they were really hyping him up as like one of the, you know, the best signings in the world for Newcastle. This is the guy that was going to take them, you know, to new heights and things like that. But, you know, it's definitely not worked out for him so far. But since Newcastle's fired Steve Bruce and they hired Eddie Howe has kind of transitioned Joel Linton over to the midfield spot. And Joel Linton has been really, really good in that spot so far. You know, he's really good at build-up plays. He's really, really good at, you know, like passing and, you know, making sure, you know, his vision on the field has just been upgraded dramatically since, you know, he transitioned over to midfield. And Newcastle's doing what they can. Dembele is definitely an option right now for them, but I'm not sure if they can get a deal done within 10 days. A player that they are interested in then, and they've already started negotiations for them, is Jesse Lingard. Jesse Lingard obviously being with Man United. You know, pretty much rotting away on the bench. And we've seen that Lingard is not a bad player, because literally this time last year, he was literally sitting on Man United's bench, not getting any game time, and then he got a 6-month loan over to West Ham, where he did he did great. I think he had like 7 goals in like six months, but 7 assists as well. He was really on a tear with West Ham United this time last year, and it was crazy to see. So if he moves over to Newcastle, I do believe he can come back to that run of form that he was in this time last year. You know, you never really know how these things work out, but you hope for the best. And I feel like Jesse Lingard to Newcastle would be a very, very, very good signing for both the player and the team. Like, I think it would work out for both, you know, parties available. Another, you know, let me just, you know, run down the list of, like, you know, a couple of transfers that, like, aren't really huge, but they do have to be mentioned. Vitaly Mykolenko, he's basically Lukudinye's replacement at Everton. The Ukrainian left back, he's really, really, really good. He's also pretty young, he's only 22 years old, but, you know, he's made some noise at his former team, and I feel like he's... I don't know if he's ready for the Premier League at the moment, but I do think that he's going to be a very solid option going forward. Jonathan Ikone, the right winger, joined Fiorentina for 14 million euros. Ikone was definitely one of the most sought-out guys during the summer transfer window, but, you know, it didn't work out. He couldn't really cement a deal. But he goes over to Fiorentina, who are doing okay. Kind of feels like maybe Ikone could be the replacement on offense for Vlahovic, who I wanted to get into next. Vlahovic is currently a player for Fiorentina, but at the same time, he's, at the moment, I believe he's the most wanted striker in the world right now. the most wanted striker that is pretty much available. You know, you have Arsenal. Arsenal are really, really doing all that they could to sign this player because they feel like he's the striker of the future for them. And obviously because of Aubameyang, you know, his disciplinary issues and now his heart issues, kind of feels like he's not really part of Arsenal's plans going forward. So Vlahovic is definitely an option. David Neres moved to from Ajax to Shakhtar Donetsk. Let's see. I think that's pretty much it. The last confirmed transfer that I wanted to get into was Andre Onana. And I know you've heard of this guy as well. Andre Onana is a goalkeeper for Ajax, or he was a goalkeeper for Ajax. A really, really good goalkeeper as well. He was young, and Ajax are known for pretty much having a legendary youth academy, a legendary system for developing youth. And Andre Onana was definitely one of their star players. It was unfortunate that 1 year ago, I believe, during a random drug testing, a routine drug testing, it was revealed that he took a banned substance. And he immediately appealed the decision. And he was basically saying that he took this banned substance on accident. It was because of an agent, someone part of his entourage that gave it to him on accident, I think. And it was unfortunate that, you know, FIFA declared that, you know, you got to be suspended for 12 months. That's the automatic ruling for taking this banned substance. I don't even know what the name is. Because of this appeal, though, and because of, you know, the evidence and that investigation into the whole matter, he got his suspension reduced from 12 months to 9 months. So he ended up signing from Inter Milan. He cannot technically join them until July. But I feel like this is a really good signing for both Inter and Onana, because Onana obviously wants to get his career back on track after basically not playing for a year. And Inter Milan, you know, they're doing well so far. They're doing pretty good in the Serie A. But their current options at goalkeeper are Handanovic. And he's okay. He's been really, really good for Inter so far. But at the same time, he's really getting up there in age. And you can't really rely on him too much going forward. So I feel like he's a really solid injection of youth into that squad.
Yeah, I was just about to ask, like, literally what happened to Samir Handanovic, because, yeah, he's a little older, I figured, so, yeah, he's solid, but I think, yeah, Onana's a good choice for them, because they're due for a Serie A win, you know. I mean, the last one they had was when Lukaku was there.
But yeah, last season.
Yeah, if they can do a nice double, that'd be really good for them. Juve is pretty much out of the picture. I mean,
definitely. Yeah, it's definitely like a three-horse race up there in Italy. It's between Napoli and Atalanta and Milan. Both Milan teams, technically, but Inter is definitely much more dangerous. I'm pretty sure that pretty much does it for confirmed rumors. We did mention a couple of, you know, a rumored transfers at the moment. The only other major rumor that I basically wanted to bring up was Adama Traore. You know, Adama Traore, the former La Masia Academy graduate, currently at Wolverhampton, the Wolves. And he was really solid for them up until this year. It kind of feels like, you know, he's just not the player that he used to be. He's definitely one of the strongest and fastest players in the Premier League. Probably the fastest. I'm not even sure if there's anyone faster than him at the moment. But his form has just not been great. I think he literally just broke a 1 year goal drought like a couple weeks ago, like 2-3 weeks ago. And Antonio Conte really, really respects this player. He really, really likes the player. Tottenham's currently negotiating with Wolves. I do know that they submitted a 15 million euro bid to Wolves that was rejected. They feel like they could get more for Adama Traore. I feel like 15 million was a good, considering his recent form, I feel like 15 million was a good bid, but apparently Wolves didn't. I'm not sure how much they want for him, but, you know, maybe it works out in the next 10 days, maybe it doesn't, regardless of what happens. I know I talked about a lot about transfers. I definitely started blabbering, but again, like I mentioned before, transfers are genuinely my favorite part of any sport.
Yeah, I think that was good coverage of the transfers and, you know, keeping everyone in the loop, because Sometimes it's hard to follow with everything happening. So that was good.
Definitely.
That was good. And I think that actually wraps it up. We're about right on time with our schedule. So again, thanks everyone for listening. And I know if you've been following us on social media, you've been noticing we are more active and always asking for your guys' input. You know, all input is welcome. We're just constantly trying to get better. So anything you guys think about the episodes or like or don't like, you know, just shoot us a DM or comment on our posts, our stories, whatever it may be. Whatever you guys have to say, it's definitely all welcome here. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like Mo mentioned, we're definitely trying to be more active on social media these days. I'm sure you guys have noticed. If you haven't, you know, you could start by following us. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. You could find us on Twitter at the Deep End PD. That is the Deep End PD. You know, I'm very active on Twitter. We do basically share the social media parts of everything, but you know, you could basically find me more on Twitter. Always, you know, ready to answer your guys' questions, have any questions, comments, concerns, anything like that. I'm there for you. You could also find us on Instagram that at the Deep End PODC. That is the Deep End Pod C. Always posting stories on there. You could always find us posting, like, you know, news, scores, you know, basically the latest in football these days. You can get your news from there. If you have any questions, comments, concerns about the podcast, we're always open. You know, we're always there to, you know, listen to you guys.
All right, guys. Well, that pretty much does it for us. Episode 12 is in the books. And once again, thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you guys next week. All right. Thank you.